Thursday morning when I opened up Twitter, all I could see were the words Hasifi and flooding. Fans and journalists were posting as fast as they could, showing awful conditions and snippets of news and rumor ahead of the United States-Germany game. Added to the timeline was the fact that Luis Suarez had been banned for 9 international matches and banned for 4 months from any football activity. Further activity occurred with news that Aguero was out for the rest of the World Cup. After a while, I disengaged from the interwebs and got ready for the US game. Went to the bar about 45 minutes ahead of time to grab a beer and a table and settle in. Good thing I didn't go to the Grand Rapids American Outlaw watch party. There was a huge line outside the Speakeasy bar at 9 a.m., 3 hours before the match. The crowd started filling in and at kickoff the room was packed, but not overcrowded like the game against Ghana. I figured with the noon kickoff on a weekday, attendance would be down, but a lot of people used their Jurgen permission slip, that's for sure. We had both games on next to each other so we could track the events and how they impacted the United States. Looking at the lineups, I was surprised to see that Brad Davis and Omar Gonzalez started, but maybe Jurgen was trying to inject some fresh legs after a draining game in Manaus. The fact that no team has won after playing there was bugging me in the background. About 20 minutes into the match, I had to get up and move around and try to will the results to come out correctly as Portugal took the lead against Ghana. For the match itself, I'm not going to offer much in the way of tactics or insight into these games. Pure emotion, so here we go. How did Jermaine Jones last the 90 minutes? To be fair, he was Germany's best player. When he wasn't passing to the Germans, or fouling them, or not marking them, he was taking out our players. Okay, once, which was Bedoya. This was the Jones I had been slagging off since his introduction to the national team. Someone said, well, who do you bring on? I don't know, but something should have been done. Howard was solid, and I thought Davis stuck to his task and was invisible in a good way. Zuzi was decent. Felt the triangle should have been Beckerman and Jones with Bradley supporting the attack. Instead, it seemed like Beckerman was by himself with Bradley and Jones pushed forward, not adding to the attack and really struggling to deal with the German midfield. Beasley had his moments and Fabian Johnson too, although he seemed to turn the ball over in the final third, which could have been trouble for the U.S. Dempsey was isolated, so not even sure what to say about him. For the Germans, I didn't even know that Podolski was on the field. Thought Howard has struggled at times, which was a scouting point. He may be a weak link later in the tournament. Schweinsteiger was very active despite trying to round into fitness. Made a meal of several challenges, though. Müller's goal was fantastic. But can I rant here about the goalkeeping? In both games today, keepers put the ball in the middle, and that seems to be a trend with goalkeepers in the tournament. As a goalie growing up and as a coach, keepers are taught to push the ball high and wide, which allows you and the defenders time to regroup. Just seems silly that players at this level are failing at such a basic concept. In the end, the U.S. was lucky and good. Had Ghana been able to press their advantage after equalizing against Portugal, the U.S. would have been in real trouble. You could look at the Germany match as either we managed the game or dodged a bullet. In case you didn't listen to my preview pod, I didn't predict the U.S. would get out of the group of death. In fact, I'm the guy who had them DFL. In essence, I got the first game wrong, and if you flipped Ghana and the United States, my table would have been spot on. I'm not jumping off or on the bandwagon. I called it like I saw it, and I was wrong. Portugal defeated Ghana 2-1 in the other match, with CR7 finally getting a goal. He was definitely not at his best. He had a handful of chances to add to the scoring and just couldn't get it done. His body language is awful, and I wonder what kind of player will be on show for Real Madrid in the upcoming league season. Speaking of Portugal, Dermot Corrigan posted on soccer.fusion.net with the heading Why Portugal Underachieve. Not sure they got so much into the why, besides maybe a small note about the lack of confidence, but I would ask, have they underperformed or overperformed? Here is the record of the Portuguese since 2000. Euro 2000 semifinals, World Cup 2002 shock exit helped by US win in Game 1, Euro 2004 lost in the final at home to Greece, World Cup 2006 semis, Euro 2008 lost to Germany in the quarters. World Cup 2010 lost to Spain in the round of 16. Euro 2012 lost to Spain in the semis. This is a country of 35,500 square miles and 10.5 million people. Look at their Iberian neighbors, Spain, who have dominated for the last 6 years. Euro 2000 got to the quarters. World Cup 2002 lost in the quarters to South Korea. Euro 2004 group stage. World Cup 2006 round of 16. Then they won Euro 2008, World Cup 2010, and the European Championships in 2012. They're 195,000 square miles, almost six times the size of Portugal, and their population is around 46,700,000, over four times the size of Portugal. Or look at the other team that has progressed deep into tournaments in the same period, Germany, almost 140,000 square miles, almost four times as large, and their population is over 80.5 million people, nearly eight times the inhabitants of Portugal. I would argue that they've overachieved. Could they have done more? Yes. But look at what they accomplish, and all that without an out-and-out Ford. Apologies to Pauletta, who I never rated. Back to the United States and their fans. I mentioned on Wednesday's pod that American supporters have come to Brazil in great numbers. Andy Thomas of SB Nation shared thoughts from an outside perspective about the U.S. fans. Among the observations were that the Americans are having fun and being outrageously American, from their language to their costumes. In the end, the Americans are actually good at this and are adding to the party down in Brazil. The BBC also chimed in, noting that the many chapters of the American Outlaw supporters group have galvanized a large traveling contingent that are loud and proud whether the U.S. is playing or not. The article also goes deeper, mentioning a key point: not all tickets purchased by Americans are for U.S. games. The BBC post also supports something brought up on the SB Nation post, that large numbers of Argentinians may be coming across and securing tickets outside normal channels. Regardless, people are coming from all over the world. Deadspin posted a fascinating video tracking fans via Facebook. Go to regressing.deadspin.com and search Watch the World Converge on Brazil using Facebook data. The video is awesome, especially on June 12th and 13th, as dozens and dozens of lines representing hundreds and hundreds of people descend on Brazil. It's really cool. The afternoon slate of games were from Group H. Ahead of the Belgium-South Korea game, Wim van Val, writing for ESPN FC, looked at how Lukaku was being used by the Red Devils. There's a lot of frustration from the player and the fans about his lack of production. Wim laid out how the team is playing compact and conservative, and made the case that this does not fit the big forwards' game. The question ahead of the match is, what would Wilmots do? Open up the team or go with Origi in place of Lukaku? Well, Wilmots did neither. In fact, he changed the entire team. Keeping Courtois in goal, he went with Vertonghen, Van Buyten, Van der Boer, and Lambaerts in the back, with Mertens, Fellaini, Dembele, Yanezay, and Defoe in midfield, and Kevin Morales up top. However, I wasn't able to see how this played out, as I watched Russia against Algeria in a beautiful stadium in Curitiba, reminiscent of St. James's Park. The pitch, however, was a different story. Bare patches and the surface cut up all over the place. Cocorin scored a wonderful header from a first-time serve from the left-hand channel early in the match to get things going. This goal put Russia in the second round. After that, Algeria actually started moving through the gears but were short of ideas in the final third, and when chances were created, their finishing let them down. I was trying to come up with notes for the second half and didn't have much other than that both teams were trying to earn their Screen Actors Guild cards. Then on the hour mark, the story of the group changed again. Algeria equalized on a Slimani header as Akinfeev flapped at the cross that put the Desert Foxes through, and for a brief moment in time, if Algeria had scored again and the 10 men of Belgium had lost, Algeria would have won the group. Well, the Red Devils took care of that as Vertonghen scored with just under 15 minutes to go. Algeria managed to secure the point, and a second African team is through to the knockout stage. My predictions were all off for this group. I had Belgium winning the group with South Korea second, Russia third, and Algeria with last with no points. Before I sign off, another plug for my blog and podcast. My blog is soccernomad.wordpress.com. I post there about kits and books and soccer memories and more, so give that a read. My regular podcast can be found at austinlong1974.podomatic.com or on iTunes. Just search Soccer Nomad. Please give those shows a listen. As always, hit me up on Twitter at austinlong1974 with any comments or questions. So today is a day off from the World Cup. I'm going to regroup and I'll be back tomorrow with a round of 16 preview. Until then, ta-ta!